The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 21st of February, 2020. On the podcast today, first time ever, Ciro Ciccone, Chief Executive Officer of Zaim Credit Systems. That's Z-A-I-M. And Ciro explains the business model and talks about the growth they're hoping to achieve. Also on the podcast, first time as well, Paul Hill, professional investor and analyst. I like Paul. He knows his stuff. He's very good. He's worth following. Search him up on Twitter there. And there's a link here on the blog there, but search him up. And he talks about Accesso Technology, that's A-C-S-O, Northbridge Industrial Services, NBI, and Elicosoft, E-L-C-O. And we also talk about Paul's investment strategy. He's been doing it for years, and he's been doing very well. Plus, as always on the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ciro Ciccone, Chief Executive Officer of Zaim Credit Systems, Z-A-I-M is ticker. Ciro, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Now, you're pretty much new to the listed market, so there's maybe a lot of people out there will not know exactly what you do. So could you give us a brief summary as to what Zaim Credit Systems is all about, please?
Absolutely, yes. Zaim is a microfinance company based in Russia. We provide microfinancial services to the lowest level of population, those that we could call unbanked or unbankable, and we consider ourselves a company that mixes, driven by profit, but we are fintech with a look to the financial inclusion of these people that are normally neglected to any sort of service.
Understand.
Profit driven.
Excellent stuff. I understand. Of course, you're a listed company going for profit. So you're a microfinance focused in Russia. And so, what stage are you at the moment?
We are at. We are very small, but we have 7 years of experience. Mm-hmm. We are quite a mature company. We have processed close to 2 million transactions, mm-hmm. and more than 1 million loans have been issued. So let me say that we are a mature company with the perspective of growth that could be in a startup, because market is in a fantastic growth and opportunity is very big.
Yeah, and people you target, how do you target them? Is it online? Is it via shops or branches, bank
both,
branches?
Oh, both, okay. Both. We have 92 directly managed stores, mm-hmm. all focus on Moscow region and Western Russia. Mm-hmm. And from that point of view, we are the largest company in Western Russia. And also we made IPO and raised money to fund the growth online, because was the equity level was one of the condition precedent that we need to match to operate the online. Mm-hmm. And we started online in November, because we got floated in November the 4th, and performance is going very well.
Yeah, and is this, you obviously want to grow here, and you are expecting the growth to come from the online?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, from both, but mostly from online. Because from online point, our platform, we have a bespoke IT system, which we have developed internally. We're proud to say that we can operate in any part of the country, and let me say, in any part of the world where a Russian document holder is in that moment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, imagine that it's the market is much bigger than for a simple store. Yes, we expect growth online.
Yeah, yeah. And so why are you targeting Russia?
Well, this is a story of life, typical story of life. The founder of this company is a Russian citizen whose background is a bank. His family own and run a small bank from more than 30 years. When the regulation and the federal legislation on microfinance was released in late 2011, he decided to start this business, and at a later stage, around 2014, I was involved because I start to finance the business through a funding mechanism that I established in Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. In 2016-17, regulation changed significantly, and basically we decided that he wanted to step out because he had to make a decision, either being a bank owner or microfinance. He was in his family business for more than 30 years, so he stepped out and I took over. Then when I took over, at that moment, my holding company held 100% of Zaim, which now is reduced to 74 because of the IPO. Mm-hmm. I start to operate with and build up a very, very good team, focus young. And the company went through dramatic improvements of the market, of the regulations, and we face everything. I have to say that Russia now is a very friendly environment for this industry. Mm-hmm. Regulatory framework has been assessed by IPO and stock market experts as extremely advanced, quite similar, and for many aspects even more advanced than Western Europe. And this is very important. In Russia, we are regulated and vigilated by the central bank, so yeah. The market is very transparent.
Yeah, I suppose I suppose when people hear of Russia, first of all, they're a bit worried about the, like you said, the transparency or the regulation.
The level you can see on the prospectus, but the level of AML and KYC is higher than many other countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. And is getting tighter and tighter. Let me say, Central Bank of Russia is doing a great job. Has been painful, I have to say, it has been painful because we have been obliged to integrate all this evolution into an IT system because at the end we serve very small tickets, like £90, you know, so we have been obliged to create something that was fully automated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it has been a big challenge, but we succeeded it.
Yeah, and apart from the regulation side, we say is all good. What about competition there? I mean, is there a lot of competition in Russia?
Well, no, not for us at least. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of companies, but let me say that this improvement of the regulatory framework is reducing dramatically the number of players. More than 55% of the company have closed because they couldn't face all the evolution of the rules. Mm-hmm. And as I said, in less than 2 years, we went from 4,000 to 1,700 companies, roughly speaking. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, market is booming; is growing 25% compounded year on year. And it's this time to become 10 times or even more what is now. Mm. So no, I would say that it's we are in a sweet spot where a booming market is served by a consolidating industry.
Yeah, so, and generally, how are the loans delivered? Or is it via credit card or what happens?
We have, as I told you, we have a very sophisticated IT system. Mm-hmm. When we operate any sort of financial instrument available and allowed in the country. But we are particularly proud that we have our own debit card, MasterCard, that the company has successfully got approved from MasterCard in 2015 and 16. It was a very hard moment in that moment for Russian companies to get some endorsements at the international level, as you remember. But it has been very tough, but we went through and we got approved. And we are proud to say that this is one of the most relevant instruments we use to create not just financial support, but also inclusivity to our clients, because this card is completely cost-free and very friendly, and it's for any client we assume trustworthy. And it gives to people that are normally neglected the possibility to access to not just money or funds, but also to the services that the online world now is providing, you know, because now having a credit card or not is a real segregation world, especially at the low level of society. So I hope I answer you, but just to recap, we operate our own card, any third-party card, any payment system available in Russia can be operated by our IT system.
And as far as business is concerned at the moment, how's it going, and what are your targets there?
Targets in terms of a client or targets
yeah,
in terms
clients
of
clients or profitability or revenue, anything really going forward?
Look, we are targeting company was profitable already in 2018. 2019 is like couldn't be profitable because basically we drained cash to pay the IPO costs, because IPO has been a long and painful process. We were supposed to go public in July, but at the end we closed it at beginning of November. And I'm proud to say that we have been the sole IPO at the standard in the last part of 2019. And so 2019 was has been influenced by this investment on the IPO, and 2020 is going to be profitable. And you know, we have a compounded effect because we will reinvest all the profits on a monthly basis, because our cash flow is very, the gearing is very high. We speak with our working capital gears 4 to 5 times a year. So I don't know, I'm not allowed to say figures, but we have a good profit, we foresee a good profit this year, and because all the KPIs already indicate that we are overperforming our plan, and quite likely we are thinking about a dividend policy for next year.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, one final thing to do, Ciro, or three final things. If someone's listening right now and likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, very simple. We are already profitable, so there is no... there is not so much time, long time to wait before seeing significant profit also for shareholders. Our plan is fully funded. This means that we are not going to to need additional income of funds or new equity issues that could increase dilution, because the plan is fully funded, and we are focused on delivering our business plan in this moment. And the third one is that market conditions and industry conditions combined give us a very sweet and comfortable spot to become, to achieve over all our targets. So what I can say is that keep looking on us. We have made only one RNS so far. To announce that key KPIs were extremely encouraging. And we're going to release more RNS and more announcement and more podcasts, if you would be so glad to invite me again, to keep everybody updated. But I would like to close in a way that would describe us, that we are very small at this moment. The share price is extremely low. Mm-hmm. And so this could give, compared to the fact that the company is already profitable, this could, and it's an easy mathematic that investors now could have growth expectations as big as good startups could give. But we are not a startup, as I told you, we are quite a mature company.
Excellent stuff. Cyril, good to chat to you. And like you say, hopefully more news coming out. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Hill, professional investor and equity analyst. Paul, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Morning, Justin.
Now, do you know what? I saw you on Twitter and I haven't seen you on there for a while. And I thought, this guy looks like he knows what he's doing. So I visited your bio on Twitter and it says here you are a professional investor, equity analyst, and the way you're breaking down figures suggests to me you're not the average punter on Twitter that I see just punting stocks because they believe what the CEO says. So so take us through your background, Paul. So where have you come from? Is that all you do now? Is just invest for yourself or what?
Yeah, I'm a professional investor. I mean, just turning the clock back a bit. I mean, I came out of university sort of like mid-80s, spent about 13 years in corporate life with Unilever and in the telco sector, and also doing M&A, largely in sort of financial roles, senior financial roles. Mm-hmm. And then I found I was actually making more money on the stock market through my long-term investing than I was actually earning, even though I was on a decent salary. So I decided to sort of like shut up shop and start up my own business called PMH Capital, which was investing my own funds back in 2003. And since then, I've really been concentrating largely on the small cap space, which is my sort of like sweet spot. And I've actually coming up to my 20th anniversary of measuring how I've done. And I've sort of like done, I've made actually 239 selections or stock picks over that 20-year period. Hit rate in the small cap spec is 62%. And my win stroke, my gain stroke loss ratio is two times. That means I make two times more through my winners than I do through my losers. And if you add all that up, it comes out at around about a 15.5% compound average return, excluding dividends, over that 20-year period through two economic cycles, compared to the FTSE All Share, which, because of the two economic cycles, the crash in 2008-09, the credit crisis, and obviously the dot-com bust, the FTSE has only done 1.5. So I'm absolutely delighted of how it's gone. I don't expect those type of returns going forward, but yeah, I'll do this now full time. I mean,
do you know what I like, Paul, is that the fact is I can tell straight away you're a big fan of the spreadsheet. And those figures right there tell me right there you're a big fan of the spreadsheet. And I like the fact
I'm not sure whether that's a criticism or not.
No, I love the spreadsheet. I'm obsessed with it. Because when it comes down to it, and I'm writing a piece, I may get to write enough to get a book together. But my investment career has been the same. And you go through these periods where your investment strategy evolves and you get better and better. And I'm always amazed by how people think they can just start investing or trading and make money straight away, and I try and compare it to other professions and all this, but I can tell straight away you know what you're doing, you keep it a track. And when you measure something, and this is what a lot of people don't do, is when you start measuring something you start getting better at it, you know, and you're measuring your performance. I can see that straight away. But so can you tell me the first company that you really got excited about, that you really invested in, that you made some money on or you lost some money on, that really gave you the bug?
Well, certainly one which stood out in my mind. I was working at O2 in a senior finance role back in 2002, and I'd put a fair chunk of money, my own cash, into a company called Traffic Master.
Oh yeah.
I was working at home on Friday, and this is during the summer. And I was decided, right, I'll finish early, finish about 4 or 5 o'clock, and I was cutting the grass. Okay, mm-hmm. And by the time I'd actually finished the grass, Yeah, and this is like 2 hours. My portfolio had gone up by, well, basically the value of those shares had gone up by like £45,000.
Wow.
And that was the moment I thought, what the hell am I doing working for a company when, you know, if you select well you choose your stocks right, then you can make a lot more money. And TrafficMaster was a unique situation in the fact that it released a big contract award on that day. It used to do traffic information, and I think it was a big contract with Peugeot for a UK rollout, hence the shares responded very favorably. And that sort of like lit the light in my mind, and I just thought the power of investing. My wheelhouse type of investment is small cap, but a GARP type investment. I don't tend to go for the sort of the cigar butts, but I tend to, I'd more prefer the companies that can grow, have got economies of scale, are clearly scalable, high gross margins, good positive operating leverage, and generate, you know, positive or around about 100% cash conversion. And that sort of like brings me towards the software technology stocks in typical.
You're a man after my own heart there. So growth at a reasonable price. At the moment, right now, where we are, I mean, yesterday or the last couple of days, actually, the American market has been hitting all-time highs. And I'm finding myself getting more bearish. Every time I see those headlines, you know, flashing up on CNBC, I'm starting to worry a lot more and more. What's your thoughts at the moment? If sentiment-wise, where are you at the moment? Where do you feel the markets are at the moment?
Well, I've certainly found it extremely difficult to find, you know, GARP plays over the last 2 or 3 years. It's been very, very difficult. I mean, if you look at the software plays, enterprise in particular, they trade right like 5 or 10 times sales, and the ones out in the States, you know, might be a lot more. And then you look at sort of like, you know, individual stocks. Tesla has just gone bonkers over the last month or so. Beyond Meat went crazy last year. So sentiment is very optimistic for those, unfortunately, GARP stocks. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at other sectors and you've got energy, that's been beaten down and is really at all-time lows. Many stocks are trading below book value. And also the banks are not exactly sort of like, you know, going to the moon. I mean, Lloyds is on just about book value as well. So it's sort of, you have to pick the spaces. I would say overall, we definitely need a correction. And it is a bit of a Tina market. You know, you've got nowhere else to put your money. Mm. And therefore, stocks get the bid from most investors because there's too much liquidity out there.
Yeah. So, let me ask you about your portfolio. How many stocks do you hold at the moment?
Well, I ideally, you know, go for around about sort of like, you know, 20 to 25. I have a lot less than that at the moment, simply because I'm just struggling to find out, you know, stocks to buy. I have a big chunk of cash.
Yeah.
I mean, my portfolio is, I'm almost about 45% cash at the moment because I've been selling some of the stocks into the market to, you know, to take profits to redeploy if there's ever going to be a dip. So I've got a low level of equity coverage at the moment, and as I say, I'm looking for the right opportunities. But as I say, I'm a value player, and if I think that a stock, I mean, you never buy at the bottom. If you do, it's fluke. Mm-hmm. I hardly ever sell at the top unless it's a takeover, simply because if a stock does well and goes above my, you know, sort of valuation, or significantly above the valuation, I tend to trim or even exit and redeploy. And that's what actually I've been doing over the last, you know, couple of months. And you know, three stocks I can talk about, I've actually, you know, been buying, you know, over, you know, recently to add to positions because those haven't yet moved as far as I think they're, you know, the shares are worth.
Do you know what? It's almost like talking to myself here. I have close to 40% in cash. I have about 15 stocks, but a low level, you know, exposure to them, around about 2.5%, most of them. And it's just because I think the valuations, I genuinely do think we're in for, and I know people have been saying this for like 3 years now, but I think this year, I think coronavirus is the straw that breaks the camel's back. We're starting to get all the supply chains breaking down, and I think we'll have a wobble. So I'm just waiting for that wobble. I mean,
I hope you're right, but I actually don't think you will be. I think the market is correctly pricing in the risk. It's going to be a more of a Q1, maybe Q2 phenomena, and then we'll start seeing growth thereafter.
Can it be that clean cut though? You know, you guys start getting businesses going out of business.
Well, I mean, if you look at the actual, you know, the stats coming out, I mean, it's difficult to obviously believe the stats in China, but the number of cases and the number of fatalities, luckily, are starting to decline. But if this type of, you know, highly contagious disease was happening in any other country, it would be a major problem. But China has locked down 60 million people quarantined. That's the population of the UK. I mean, you know, you've got to tip your hat to Beijing for doing that. And on that basis, you know, it's going to hit supply chains, no doubt about it. Auto is already struggling. Apple came out with a profit sales warning a few days ago. But if you think that, you know, this is going to be contained, which is what I do and the market does, then I think we're going to be okay. But I would say, more interestingly, is that in the lower reaches of the AIM market in particular, a lot of funds, small cap funds, have been under pressure of the last sort of like year, particularly because of the fiasco at Neil Woodford funds, and that's meant that a lot of small cap funds elsewhere have had to hold more cash and have got redemptions. So you're actually seeing quite a few interesting situations where there are fund managers who are having to distress sell their holdings on the market, which is artificially depressing some of those shares. So you are getting in the small cap sector, you are getting, unfortunately, less liquidity, but it does mean you get bigger price dislocations. So there are occasional one-off type opportunities in the small cap, whereas in the big cap, because of the liquidity wise, you're not getting much opportunity. And it certainly hasn't yet really. I mean, you had a 3.5% pull down because of coronavirus. I mean, that says everything, really.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's. Yeah. Do you know what? Part of me is just thinks. Okay. You know, we've been threatening that. I know everyone says it's different this time, but the yield curve. You got gold hitting an all-time high. Well, a 7-year high. I mean, I just think they won't be this. Part of me thinks, why has China been so transparent and so quick to react? And the people saying, oh, the deaths are 10 times. I don't believe it's 10 times what it is, deaths rates. But part of me thinks, why have they been so quick to act? And that's what worries me, you know? And why have they shut down everything?
Because it's highly contagious.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's contagious, but it's only 2.8% or 2.5% death rate. And that's in mostly elderly people with health conditions. You know, so it's not as bad as. Why have they been so quick to react and so transparent? When in actual fact, we can't even believe their GDP figures, let alone what the figures are on this. But let's look at some individual stocks. Say three small caps you really like at the moment. You reckon, you know, they've got growth potential and you reckon they are at the right price. Then what do you reckon?
Okay, well, I mean, the first one is, which I have been buying recently, is Accesso, which is a theme park attraction software provider that was originally valued at about 30 quid or priced about 30 quid. The shares are now trading at about £5.50. They had a... They were going to be bought out. They had a number of takeover offers over the last 9 months or so. They fell away and the shares have plummeted. They've got a new CEO. I run the numbers on it. And, you know, you look at sort of like peer group valuations. If you used a straight sort of like, you know, a modest 3x EV sales multiple, you'd get over 10 quid for the shares. Currently at £5.50, they trade at less than 2x sales. So they're certainly not cheap. And if you believe that they've got software that is scalable, which is true because, you know, 90% gross margins, etc., and they've got a good runway, and that's just really large. And regardless of winning any new customers, it's just rolling out in existing clients. Things like they've got Merlin, who's Alton Towers. They own. They also service Six Flags, and they also service Cedar Fair out in the States. A 3i, and they've got lots and lots of other clients as well. Yeah. So I like that share. That's one I own.
So Accesso, so ACSO is ticker there, and they're just so £5.75 a share. They're running up 160 million market cap. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I'm hoping to actually sit down with the CEO and the FD, they've got to appoint a new CFO. So they got rid of the old one. So I'm hoping to sit down with those guys when they come to report their prelims on the 24th of March. So we'll see how they're getting. But as long as you take a long term view, 3 to 5 years, I'm sure this one's going to be good. But I own the shares. I've got a lot, you know, and you know, I'm happy to hold. Another stock that I own and have been adding to, not this year, but certainly was towards the back end of last year, was a company called Northbridge, which does has two divisions, does load banks for commissioning and testing battery farms, and also has another division called TASMA, which is oil and gas tooling equipment. And they've got excellent operating leverage. For every sort of extra pound they get about 55p coming, drop forward to the bottom line. The big growth drivers on their the biggest division, which is the load bank division, is renewables, data centers, and distributed power. So essentially, what you've got is that, you know, lots of new battery farms which need to be tested, and also what you've got out in the States, for instance, in California. I don't know if you've been following it, but they've had lots of blackouts recently because of the fires, the fires. Well, they now need a whole lot of new generators for businesses and stuff like that. And so these guys are going to be helping commissioning and testing those generators out in California. And then likewise with Tasman, I mean, out in their biggest center is out in Australia. And I don't know if you're probably aware of the new marine regulations which have come in terms of low sulfur for ships and stuff. It's about 5% of the world's demand for crude, so about 5 million barrels per day. Because of the tighter regulations, the real sort of like really desired or in demand type of crude is heavy low sulfur. And you won't believe this, and the Australian Pyrenees type of crude oil is it was trading, well, compared to the Brent, was trading at 65 about a month ago or 2 months ago, and Australian Pyrenees was at $95 per barrel. So what you've got in Australia is such that you've got the right type of crude, and also they're the biggest exporter, Australia is, of LNG in the world, bigger than Qatar. And they've sold all their exports, and they haven't got anything domestically, so it's become a political issue that they've had to actually explore. So both of those divisions are going to do well. It's on a low valuation of about 1.1 times book. Businesses of this type go for 2.2 times book. And I could see the shares double from here. I mean, my fair value is over £2. And I think, you know, you could easily see, if you've got a time horizon of 2 to 3 years, you could easily see that it's at £3. And I'm willing to hold and wait and see.
Well, do you know what? A part of the deal as well is when you find these stocks is knowing that, they're not that popular. And I genuinely think... I don't know if I've ever heard of this company before. So it's under the radar, so that's very good, isn't it? I mean, you know, generally. Okay. So, when you're looking for stocks, do you use a screener in any way? What do you do?
No, I don't tend to use screeners. I think they're rubbish. I just spend a lot of time looking at RNSs, speaking to the management team, running models, doing comparatives, and then things just pop up of interest. And it might well come out of, you know, things like the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, you know, Investors Chronicle, or even the New York Times and this sort of stuff. And then you start cross-referencing stuff and thinking, crikey, that's really interesting. I'll tell you, I had one real light bulb moment from it was the Sunday Business. You remember that newspaper years and years ago, back in, I don't know, 2002 or something, which went bust. Mm. They did a massive article at that time on online gambling. Okay, and on the back, I know online gambling has got all kinds of problems recently, but back then, etc., it was doing really, really well. And they did an article on a company called Cryptologic. Well, I don't, it was the whole industry, and they mentioned Cryptologic, and I invested in that, and I bought a shed load of shares at about, I don't know, $4. They were out in Toronto. And I think I sold for about $12, $15. I mean, admittedly, they did go to about $50 afterwards. So I didn't exactly sell at the top. But when you make, I mean, that's me, you know, I don't buy at the bottom, I don't sell at the top, but I make a decent margin in between, and I'm happy to play it. So you do get these light bulb moments from lots and lots of research. Funnily enough, and I don't, I, when you listen to people like Warren Buffett, that's what they do. They spend a shed load of time just reading, understanding.
Do you know what? I completely agree with you. I did see a bit on your website about that. So there's no substitute for research and reading. There's not. And genuinely, you'll only find good ideas. Like I said, you're not going to find, you may take 10 days to find one good idea. But that's because good ideas don't come along very often, you know? And
no, exactly.
So you have to put the groundwork in to find those ideas, don't you, really?
Absolutely, yeah. And also the other thing which is good is, or a good strategy, certainly what I adopt, is that you look at excellent businesses that you really want to invest in, but the only reason you can't is because of the price.
Yeah.
And then you just carry on monitoring it, and then once they fall, to a price you're acceptable with, then you buy. And I've done that with Accesso. I've been monitoring this for 10 years. Yeah. I remember when it was like 5p.
What was it called, something else before?
It was called Low Q.
That's it, Low Q. That's it. I remember reading about them in Investors Chronicle years ago. You know, that's a cracking idea.
It was probably my, along with Google, it was probably one of my biggest mistakes not to invest, because it was about 8p. And I remember umming and ahhing, thinking, God, they've got really niche software. Are they really going to compete? Have they got scalable? And I thought, I'm going to put my money into other stocks. They went from 8p to 30 quid. So I did miss that one, to say the least. But I've been monitoring that for, say, 15, 20 years. And now it comes down to a price that I'm happy to go into. So, you know, that's another strategy that I adopt. And there's plenty of really, really good small cap companies that I would love to put my money into. But, you know, the price is not there.
Yeah, exactly. And so how many have you done so far? Is that two or three stocks?
I've done two. Yeah, I've got Alico Soft, which basically is build tech software. Shares are trading at about 79p at the moment. I mean, I've been in it for about 4 or 5 years. Haven't sold, just added, got a decent position over that period. Shares, they basically, what they do is that they digitize all the construction so CAD, CAM, project planning. They've got some fantastic customers. Most of the UK sort of like house builders and construction firms use it. They've done like they've built the Shard and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's some great reference sites. If you look at the actual references, if you look at 2020 sales multiple, they're on about 2.2 times. Mm. Last week, Schneider Electric bought one of their competitors, RIB software, for 5 times sales or 4.9 times, so double what that is. And if LecoSoft can increase its like-for-like organic revenue growth, then these will double, absolutely double. So I actually think there's little downside at current levels, but there's lots of potential upside. I mean, just to give you another indication, the two biggest players in this market are Nemetschek and Autodesk. Both trade for over 10 times EV sales. And these, you know, LecoSoft's on 2.4 times sales. So, you know, I think they'll be bought out at some point in time. When, I don't know. And if they can drive that top line organically, which is the big if, but if they can do that, then, as I say, I could easily see this going from, you know, 80p to north of 150 in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, well, do you know what? That's a share we share. I own that as well. So
Have you spoken to John Ketley at all?
No, I haven't. I've read about it. I saw someone on Twitter about their software and the AI software and all the stuff, and I read up about it.
They've recently launched some new AI software, which basically allows you to take a digital picture of your front room or whatever it is, and to then change the floor type. And I'll tell you, it is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it does the shadowing, does the changes the pitches, the granularity, the HD. I mean, I did I posted something on Twitter, okay, and did a before and after. So I posted a picture of my front lounge with a carpet, and then with a sort of
that's the picture I saw, I think.
It was almost impossible to tell the difference. Was that good?
Well, do you know what, I looked into that, I saw that, and they're not cheap, I thought, but I thought, I like that tech. And I went through and looked at all the awards they've won and looked at the revenue uptake, and I thought, they are growing nicely. And
I've probably a shed load more shares than you. And I am not selling. There's no chance. I mean, it's great software, brilliant customers. And as I say, if they can jump start that top line organic growth, you could double your money in the next. And that, I mean, I'm not trying to be bullish. I'm just saying that's reality.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Well, Paul, it's cracking to talk to you, and hopefully you'll come on again very soon. But I think people should definitely follow you on Twitter. It's a Capital PMH, is at Capital PMH to follow. So, Paul, hopefully we'll catch up very soon. Thanks for coming on.
Many thanks, Justin. Cheers. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Ariana Resources. I'm sure up in sentiment with gold, up 6%, 3.5 pence. Of course, gold, I think overnight, hit $1,638 an ounce. Last seen those prices 7 years ago. It's rallying strongly on coronavirus fears. At four, Emotion Group, up 4% to 7.75 pence. At three, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, up 32% to 0.5 1.22 pence. At 2, Oracle Power, down 5.26% to 0.9 pence. And at 1, again, it's been falling a lot, highly lately, up 50% to 32.5 pence. Sorry, 97.5 pence, up 32 pence, that is. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Jubilees Metal Group, Direct Dealing. At 4, Union Jack Oil, update on West Newton activity. At 3, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, secured loan facility for progress at OPL 226 project. That's why their share price has risen. At 2, what is that? It's Armadale Capital project update. Number 1, most liked RNS, came from United Oil and Gas, update on completion of Rockhopper acquisition. That's it. That's from United Oil and Gas, of course. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.